Welcome to Mindful Mother, a podcast by Esk and Ivy. Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Mindful Mother. Today we are joined by Hannah, who is a mum of two, a community midwife, and also co-founder of Grow and Gather. Grow and Gather run active birth workshops as well as antenatal education classes. Hannah, welcome. It's so lovely to see you here today.
Hi, Nikki. Thank you so much for having me.
Would you like to give us a little bit of information about what Grow and Gather does before we get into our podcast today?
Yeah, that sounds great. So you are spot on. I co-founded a company called Grow and Gather last year in May, so we're about a year old. And I work alongside my colleague, Hayley, who's also a community midwife. And really, we offer antenatal classes and active birth workshops for expecting couples in and around Edinburgh. And we are kind of using our midwifery skills because we're both registered midwives, and we're using also a couple of other strings to our bow. So Hayley is a yoga teacher, so she does some of the active birth stuff, and I've also got a hypnobirthing teacher accreditation, so we do a lot of hypnobirthing in and amongst our active birth workshops. So yeah, lots of bits and bobs.
Oh, it sounds fascinating. And anybody that's interested, we will, of course, tag in the episode so they can go and find you on social media or they can find your website. But today, Hannah and I are mostly going to get into chat around home birth, because obviously you experienced two home births, which you've said as well are quite different and as home births go as well. So two wonderful home births, and we'll talk about what, you know, makes you eligible for a home birth and what you can do if you are not eligible for a home birth, because obviously it's not for everybody and some people may choose to birth in a hospital or the midwifery run unit.
Yeah.
Do you want to share your experience of your home birth, Hannah? That would be
sure,
lovely.
Yeah. So I've got two wee boys. So one of them is 3 and one is 4 months. He was born in February. I'm expecting one of them to burst through the door at any moment now, actually. And they were both born at home. At the time when I was pregnant with my first son, I was working in a home birth team. So I was delivering lots of babies at home within my role as a midwife. And so for me, the option of having a home birth just seemed kind of like it just kind of clicked into place, really, because it's what I was seeing kind of every day. And I think I wasn't 100% sure. I kind of said, yeah, great, let's go for it. Let's try for a home birth. But I think I was quite realistic that actually it might be that on the day or on the run up to the day, I maybe changed my mind, or there could be things that happen, you know, in the course of labor that mean that I don't have my baby at home. But I did have him at home. It was wonderful. My first birth was quite a sort of textbook, like 12 hours first birth, and was supported by my colleagues, which is lovely. That's a real perk of the job when you're a midwife, that you do normally have your colleagues looking after you when you have your baby, which is lovely. And that was down in London. And then I had Noah in February up here in Edinburgh. And it was a much faster affair. So I'm not sure how much of my hypnobirthing breathing I actually managed to do, because it was so so speedy. But yeah, both born at home. So it was a wonderful experience.
What are the benefits of birthing at home? Obviously, you don't have to go into a hospital and you can be at home after the baby. And that is, particularly if you've got older children, logistically, that is obviously a very appealing benefit to it. And we were just quickly chatting about the wonder hormone that is oxytocin. So, which anyone who listens to the podcast or follows me on social media will probably be like, here she goes with oxytocin. But it really is a wonder hormone, isn't it? And it helps to labor progress, and obviously helps with breastfeeding as well on the other side of that. So I suppose handing that over to you, really, to go into a bit more about that, why home births are seen to benefit oxytocin production.
Yeah. It's really interesting actually that you say about like the logistics, because one of the main reasons why I really wanted a home birth with my first birth was because I really could not face the thought of getting into a car. For me, it was just unbelievable. Like I just couldn't, I honestly don't know how women do it. I don't know how you get yourself into a car and drive to hospital when you're in labor. I just couldn't have done that. Literally from the first couple of hours, I was like, clothes off, wandering around the flat. Like, I just can't understand. Women who get themselves into hospital are amazing. I'm really impressed.
And that is something as well, isn't it, to bear in mind that, and it's totally normal. So, but what can happen is on that transfer from home to hospital, your labour can sometimes slow down a little bit, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's so true. And I think it's just, all those practicalities, thinking about having to find a parking spot and get change for the parking meter, all that kind of stuff. You're kind of then using your kind of like logical brain, aren't you? And you're not switching off and letting your body just do what it's meant to do. And I think oxytocin is such an amazing hormone. We actually don't really know huge amounts about it compared to kind of like the sister hormone adrenaline, which we've kind of done loads of research about. But oxytocin is so fundamental to birth and how we birth. And I think the way that you can get oxytocin flowing is choosing to birth in an environment where you feel safest and where you feel most in control and most calm. And for some women, that's going to be home. And for some women, that absolutely is not going to be home. Like, that's not where they're going to feel most calm. And it's just choosing, you know, choosing your birthplace wisely. And if you think, actually, I feel more relaxed in my own environment, surrounded by my own things, then home is probably a good, it's a good option to think about when it comes to having a baby.
And again, I suppose afterwards, for if you're choosing to breastfeed, then again, you're in that relaxed and calm environment, which helps with the oxytocin production, which also helps with breastfeeding. That's relatively new, isn't it? Research that they're saying, well, oxytocin stimulates the same cells for that letdown reflex. So that can be really beneficial. But then on the flip side, you haven't got a midwife in the hospital, at home with you. So I know when Katie was born. I really relied on that just because of the situation of my birth. I couldn't get in and out, and then by the bed, and then but actually by the time you're struggling with your milk coming through, I was like, is it the latch? And there was a midwife there to sort of help me. So I guess it swings in roundabouts there. Or not it's beneficial.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if you do choose to have a home birth and you have your baby at home, then the midwives do come out and see you.
And then logistically, is it just planning, you would plan with your community midwife what things you need to get in? Is it likely to be your community midwife that would come out for your home birth, or is
good
it?
Question. Really good question. So at the moment it would be your midwife who you're seeing in your GP surgery that you would kind of mention it to, and do mention it, even if the midwife herself hasn't maybe had that conversation with you, don't be frightened of mentioning it. I think likely that you know someone that's had a home birth because it's such a small number of people. So I think a lot of women feel maybe like it's a really kind of odd choice or something that isn't really supported or encouraged, but it totally is. So have that conversation. And even if you're not 100% about it, I always think it's better to talk about it and better to kind of say like, yeah, I'm going to go for a home birth, and then down the line think, maybe not, as opposed to get to 40 weeks and go, actually, I'm going to have a home birth. It's maybe better to kind of like, go for it in the initial bit, and then you can change your mind, is what I'm trying to say. Like, just because you've decided on something at one point in your pregnancy doesn't mean you're signed up for it indefinitely. And the midwives aren't going to say, well, you said you wanted to have your baby at home. Like, that's not how it works. So if you did decide you wanted home birth, that's fine. The only extra things that really happen is you have an appointment at home at 36 weeks. And that's just to kind of have a look at the space that you have and to think about, if you're getting a birth pool, where are you going to put the birth pool? Do you have like reception for the phone if we needed to call an ambulance? Just kind of the practical stuff, really. Mm-hmm. And then we get the hospital to deliver gas and air, so Entonox, to the house, and kind of big boxes that are filled with everything you would need. So really, if you are planning a home birth, there's not that much you would need to get. Towels, really. And if you're wanting to use water, then you would probably need to organize a birth pool independently.
And that's just you get that through the hospital, your midwifery team, or is that a sort of secondary service that you...
Yeah, so that's like an independent thing that you would just need to do kind of privately. So you can rent them. I know there's quite a few doulas in Edinburgh that, that have them that you can rent. I think the Pregnancy and Parent Centre has one that you can use. So there are avenues to booking them, but it wouldn't be through your midwife.
And of course, you've got your bath at home as well.
Exactly.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that's where I had Noah in the bath. I never made it to the pool. It never got filled up. I didn't have enough time, so the bath did just fine.
Oh, and then so as a midwife, and I guess the obstetrics team, what sort of things are they looking for? So, if someone said, "Oh, I would like to home birth," but perhaps you wouldn't be able to. So I'm thinking from my point of view, I had a C-section first time. Would I still be able to go for I suppose it would depend on the circumstances of your C-section, obviously, but or your cesarean birth. Sorry, trying to rephrase that one. C-section, cesarean birth. If that would still be considered high risk sometimes, but obviously very much depends on the circumstances of the first C-section.
Yeah.
What kind of high risk conditions would you say perhaps home birthing isn't going to be the best situation for you this time in your pregnancy?
So I think that is a really interesting conversation to be had, because really the all women can make the decision independently about place of birth. So I'm very wary to use phrases like allowing women, or even the phrase kind of high risk to me sits uncomfortably. Like I don't really like that sort of high risk, low risk kind of phrase, because I don't know, what's that saying to women from the outset? Like, you're high risk from the very beginning of your pregnancy. I mean, that doesn't induce oxytocin,
knowing that you're
high risk. I just think it's just not a helpful phrase, really. So I would say all women have the opportunity to birth at home if that's what they want to do. There is definitely circumstances where we would be having conversations about the safety of that, and maybe having conversations about what kind of guidelines say or what kind of hospital protocol might encourage. But if I always say to women, if you've done that reading, so cesarean section, Nikki, is a really good a good one to think of as an example. You know, in the home birth team in London, we looked after quite a number of women that had a VBAC at home. And I think if you've done that reading and you feel really well supported, and you've got confident, competent midwives around you that are happy to help you at home, then great. Like, that's your ultimately it's your choice, isn't it? And I think what happens sometimes is because there's quite strict criteria on birth centers. So there's a lot of criteria in terms of your BMI, your previous births. So if women feel like they can't access a birth center, then sometimes those women will instead choose to go at home. So sometimes actually what you do see with home birth is actually women who are, you know, high risk, if we're using that phrase, because they've decided, you know, I'm not allowed on the birth center, so I'm going to have my feedback at home. But I think it's most women, if there is something which is kind of outside the guidelines, most women would be encouraged to have a conversation with one of the obstetricians. So, you know, if you are you've had a previous cesarean section, or maybe you had a previous pregnancy where there are complications, potentially in-depth chat about you know, why there might be risks at home, what those risks are, how we can kind of work together. And then you either come away from that and say, do you know what, maybe that is a bit too risky for me, I'm going to choose labor ward, or actually I'm happy with my choice of a home birth, and we've got a little plan in place where we're going to do X, Y, Z should that situation arise. So it's a really individual thing. I think if you're looking for like actual clinical things that we would encourage women to be in hospital for are probably, if you've had a previous cesarean, if you've maybe lost a lot of blood previously, or a twin pregnancy, or a baby that's in a breech position, there's probably a number of things that we would say, you know what, maybe being in hospital is the safest bet. But it's ultimately a woman's choice, and I think you need to make the best decision for you.
It's really interesting you say that, actually, Hannah, because I think when you say about the birth center, that's something definitely that I think I had in my mind. And it's obviously until you do sort of research on it, you would understand. So I was banished from the birth centre. I wasn't allowed in the birth centre. So I would always therefore assume if you're not allowed to, or not allowed to, but you can't birth in the birth centre, then that would fundamentally mean that you can't birth at home.
No.
But it's interesting. And I think, so part of the reason I wasn't in the birth centre was I was an induction, and there was stuff around the induction that meant that I was too high risk. I'm doing the inverted commas here. Nobody can see me. High risk to be in that that birthing center. However, probably for getting that induction going, home would have been the best place to be for that first part of my induction, to be in that kind of quiet, calm, dark environment that we know that
you need.
It helps labor. So I suppose that kind of leads us into the next part as well, isn't it? If you've made the decision to go into hospital, for whatever reason, personal decision, whatever choice it is, you're like, do you know what, I just don't want, home birth isn't for me, what sort of things can you do to bring that birth-like environment into the hospital? I suppose it's particularly around induction, isn't it? Because
it's a really interesting one.
Sadly, so many of us, as soon as we hear the word induction, you must see it as a community midwife, when you're proposing induction to women, it's like we clamp up. It's like just the word is enough to say, oh my goodness. And there's some, I meet some ladies in my yoga class who are like, I'm so ready for induction. I'm ready for it. I feel prepared. I'm totally calm. I'm really ready for it. And you're like, amazing. And you go off. And then there's other of us that are like, though, that this is quite terrifying. And actually in my NCT class, there was me and another lady were induced on the same day. And she was like, oh, I'm just having a lovely time, and had a lovely, lovely straightforward induction. And then there was me who was, I was a little bit, I know much more now, you know, at the time. Yeah. I think if I'd known what I know now, it would have been slightly different. So I suppose my question to you is, what sort of things can we do to bring a bit of your home experience into the hospital environment?
Well, there's so much you can do. I think induction is a really interesting one, because as you say, a huge percentage of women do end up being induced, and actually there has been some research recently that is suggesting that we should offer induction at an earlier point to women. So it may even be that we see more inductions over the coming few years, depending on what we do with that piece of research. But I think the very first thing that I would say to women is just make sure, as you've kind of just said, make sure that you've made the best choice for you, and do remember that it is a choice. There are options. So like if you're thinking to yourself, do you know what, I really do not want to be induced, then don't. Like, that's okay. If you feel like you've made that decision, and you've maybe spoken to your midwife and done a bit of reading, and you feel happy with your decision, that's fine. That's ultimately up to you. And there is, you know, it's not as if you say no to induction and that's it, you're left. You know, you will be asked to come in for extra monitoring if you want it, an extra scan perhaps. So it's not like you're just left to go to like 43 weeks without anybody seeing you. But if you do decide, you know, and as you say, there's loads of women I look after who get to like 40 weeks and 10 days and they think like, oh, I'm so fed up, let's just have a baby. And so that's fine. If you decide that you're going to be induced, then thinking about things that you can bring from home. So maybe things that smell like home. So like a pillowcase is a really good example. I always think it seems a bit random, but then you can kind of put it over the pillow in hospital, and you've got, if you're putting your face into it, or then you've got something that smells a little bit home-like. Smells are always a good one. So like essential oils, if you want to bring up some essential oils, that's always a really nice thing to think about. A lot of the labor ward rooms, I think, do have like diffusers. So it's not as if, you know, if you go to the birth center, then you'll have all the lovely, the dim lights and the diffusers and the fairy lights. Like, a lot of that still happens on labor ward as well, because we recognize it's important, maybe even more important for women that are having, you know, some kind of intervention along the way. Maybe music, so bringing up down, getting a playlist on the go and bringing it up, and headphones are always good, because I think headphones, it's the same reason I think that women like a birth pool. It gives you that kind of like little space around you, if you've got those headphones in and you're listening to whatever, you're hypnobirthing or some music, you kind of feel like you're untouchable. You can just close your eyes and just zone in on whatever you're listening to. So definitely get some good music downloaded. And a TENS machine is also a really good idea, and that's something you can start off using at home and then bring up to the hospital with you. I think also, if you're not being induced, maybe just trying to stay at home as long as you possibly can is a really important thing. So thinking with your birth partner, what are we going to do if we have that early stage of labor that goes on for a number of hours, which if it's your first baby, it can, you know, that early stage of labor can really go on for quite a while. So thinking about things that you can do at home so that when you do call the hospital and you speak to the midwives, you get up there and hopefully you are in, you know, good old established labor. And it's not that like back and forth of, oh, you're 2 centimeters, you have to go home, and then you come back and you get sent home. And that's so hard and demoralizing, isn't it, when that happens? And I think also just having, I always think, some kind of birth preference. And, you know, we don't really use kind of birth plans because it's such an unplannable event, but some kind of birth preference in terms of, you know, are you planning on breastfeeding? Who do you want to cut the cord? Those kind of things. And just having it on the front of your notes, that's a really nice thing, especially for the midwives. They can just have a quick glance through it and then kind of know what you're hoping for, whether you know the gender of the baby, that kind of thing.
And I suppose it's one last thing for you to have to consider when you're in hospital and people are sort of asking you questions.
Yeah, exactly.
As well, isn't it?
You're chatting away and the midwife's like, so would you like vitamin K for the baby? Like, oh, don't talk to me. But hopefully that's what your birth partner's kind of doing anyway. Hopefully they will know, kind of, they'll know that. And a lot of the things, I would say a lot of the things that people think are that they need to write on their birth preferences are things that we would do intuitively anyway. So like delayed cord clamping or immediate skin to skin, that kind of stuff, it happens unless there's a clinical reason why it wouldn't. You know, that's the norm now. So so we, you know, we do know that those things are important.
It's so funny, you know, when you think about it, it's like with some elements we think that we're still so not backwards, but we're still based like so long at such a long time ago with the vitamin K and the cord clamping. Yeah. and then other times you look back and you think, well, that's just kind of, we're almost coming back full circle again, talking about the home birth, isn't it? You know, I'm a fan of Call the Midwife. I love a bit of Call the Midwife. And that's what just was standard, wasn't it? Our grandmothers were all kind of birthing at home, weren't they? So it's like we're coming, it's like we're getting to a place where we've got the joys of older kind of midwifery skills coming back to the home birthing. But then with the advancement of technology, like the delayed cord clamping and the vitamin K. So, and I take it that's there at the home birth as well. Sorry, this is a bit of a silly logistic question, but I guess that's all there for home birth.
So all that kind of stuff, when you decide that you want a home birth, you get like big boxes that appear at your door. So all that kind of stuff, like the Entonox, if you want gas in there, the home birth midwife, you'd have that delivered at the house. You'd also have all that kind of stuff like vitamin K for the baby. You'd have medication, you know, if you were to have a bit of a bleed after the birth, you'd have medication in the fridge for that, that gets sent to you before you have baby. So I think people sometimes think with a home birth that it's incredibly risky, but actually, really interestingly, I like a bit of research, Nikki, but I hope this doesn't bore people, but really interestingly, there's been two really big studies that have been written recently about home birth and kind of looking at the safety of home birth. And it was Mammoth. I think one of them looked at like 1 million women. So that's a lot of births. And they're looking at things like if you plan, they were comparing women that planned a home birth versus women that planned a hospital birth and outcomes. And it basically just showed the women that planned a home birth, the outcomes were like amazing, like fewer cesarean sections, fewer third and fourth degree tears, fewer maternal infections. So actually, and there was no difference in terms of outcome for babies. It wasn't, I think people really do worry about poor outcomes for the baby when they have a home birth. But these studies kind of show that there wasn't any research to kind of support that. And it is, if you are with midwives who are used to home births and are confident with delivering at home, it is a really safe option. You know, you'd get two midwives, like two of them are there, and you'd only have one up at the hospital. And it's I would say that home birth midwives are very aware of when they might need to think about going into hospital. Mm-hmm. So often I think people think about those huge big emergencies, but mm-hmm. often that's not the reason that you would transfer into hospital. It might be because mum's decided she wants an epidural, or labor's just going really slow and it's just, we're just not getting anywhere, or we're just a little bit worried about maybe mum having a high temperature. So it's not, it's often not those huge big like a massive bleed, for example. It's often a kind of slower pace, like, yeah, I think maybe we need to think about going up to the hospital, a kind of conversation between the couple and the midwives, you know. So it is a, what I'm trying to say is it is a really safe option. Even if you don't know anyone that's had a home birth, be reassured by some of the kind of statistics and the research that's out there.
Yeah, I think I've seen that as well, actually, that some of the studies that you're talking about. And it is even just that psychology of saying, I'm going to have a home birth, seems to have that positive effect, isn't it, on the outcome of birth, which is fascinating. It's that mind-body interaction, isn't it, which is hypnobirthing, obviously taps into that, yoga taps into that, mindfulness taps into that. So we're all there, and the science really supports this mind-body interaction, and likely all down to the wonder hormone that is oxytocin, isn't it?
I think there's probably other things in that research. Like, I think probably women that choose a home birth are women that are maybe a bit, you know, maybe more likely to advocate for themselves, or maybe, I don't know, higher socioeconomic. There's probably more to that research. But I think, as you say, it does look at 1 million births, and that is that's what it says. Like, if you plan a home birth, then the outcomes generally are really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating. And I think as well, from the point of view of having quite a few options as well. So I think to be able to say, you know, option number one for me is that I will have a home birth. And if we have to go into the hospital, then this is the option if we have to go into, if we need to go into hospital. And then this is the option after this, and this is the option after that. Because even in and amongst the uncertainty of birth, because there's no certainty of birth, right, that you've still got a series of events that you can feel secure in that you're working through. Whereas if I take myself as an example, my birth preference was to birth in a birthing unit, and that went out at number one when I went in. They said you can't go to the birth unit, and then I was like, oh, where am I now? Where do I go from here? And as you say, when you're in that, you know, you're having to tap into that cognitive process when you're trying to just be internal and, like, you know, lowering the cam. If you've not got other plans to sort of work through, then that can kind of leave you out on a limb. And I was talking to one of the ladies in one of the class the other day, and she said she's getting quite close to birth now. And as someone had mentioned, oh, what's your birth preference? She said, I just don't have one. I just whatever. And I thought, and there's comfort in that as well, isn't there? That you're willing to say, well, I'm just going to go with however that goes, rather than, I think what I'm trying to say here is pin your hopes on one thing. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And I think having that, you know, it's really important you have that conversation with your birth partner as well, to kind of say, so if you know that you're going to be focused solely on birthing a baby and dealing with those contractions, then you need someone beside you who's maybe going to ask the questions, or is maybe going to advocate for you if you need that, or is maybe going to be able to take on board anything else that's happening. And I think, like, you must see it as well, Nikki, it's really, actually, for me, sometimes I am, like, blown over by those couples that have done their hypnobirthing and, you know, everything goes out the window and they still manage to have this calm, beautiful, amazing experience, even if it's completely wildly different to what they had intended at the start of birth. And I think that's actually what a positive birth experience is, or what hypnobirthing is, isn't it? It's not one type of birth. It's coming away from the experience thinking, do you know, we made the best decisions for us at the time, and it was hard and it wasn't maybe what we planned, but I still feel good about the process. And I think that's sometimes what doesn't happen. You know, we go to visits and see women at home and they say, I don't even really know why I had the cesarean section. And that's where I just think, like, oh, how is that, you know, how's that happen? That's when it's hard to heal, isn't it, when you
don't, I think so,
you haven't been part of the process.
And I guess and that's the sort of time that you maybe want to reach out to your midwife team and say, do you know what, can I go in and speak to somebody, and you can have that kind of debriefing process. Because especially if it's been a fast paced twist and turn in labour, you know, there's often, obviously you're consulted at all points, but you know, there's so much going on, and I can talk, I'm talking from my own birth here, and you know, you're not an expert in this area, so people are sort of saying things and you're making quick choices, and then you get to the end and you're like, what took us on that path? So and it's certainly something that I did afterwards, went for a debrief with the obstetrics team, and actually it was really good to be told, well, this is why this happened, it wasn't because of X, Y, or Z, what I was thinking in my head. So yeah, and if this hadn't happened, then you probably would have had the outcome that you wanted. So yeah, I think it is, can be really good to go and speak to the medical team afterwards to find it, because it is, you can't be expected to know what's going on when you're going through, especially with a first time baby, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's so true. And all, as you say, you know, we're talking about hormones. All those hormones are flying around. You're probably exhausted as well. So I'm sure people are telling you, but it might not be until, you know, you've been home a week or 10 days where you kind of think, well, but why, or what was the reasoning behind? And then totally say to your community midwife, because actually we can access those labor notes and we can kind of have a look and go through it and go through it with you. So do say.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think as well, it's the birth partners a lot of the time that have a bit more of have an understanding of what happened. My birth partner had a whole list of, we went here at this time and that time, which was brilliant actually. He kept a note of it all. So afterwards I was like, and then what happened? And then he was just pulling up on his phone and saying, well, at 9:15 we went down to the labour ward. He had it all on his phone. I was like, oh, well done.
Yeah, that's so good. And actually that's something that we kind of talk about a bit in our antenatal classes as well. It's kind of like, what can birth partners do that can kind of help the flow of labor and get oxytocin going, even if, you know, even if things aren't going to plan necessarily. Mm. So, and I often hear, it's interesting hearing partners talk, because they are watching a loved one go through this huge experience and they can't really do much, can they? And I think sometimes, you know, talking about home birth as well, I think sometimes partners at home births are more, they feel more free to be involved because it's their environment. So they're, you know, more able to just make people a cup of tea, or they deal with the pool, or they are maybe feel more comfortable to kind of touch their partner and be kind of near them. But I think sometimes as soon as you go into hospital, what happens is they kind of maybe feel like it's not their environment, so they don't really know how they can help. So I think, yeah, that's something we talk about a lot, is ways that partners can kind of get involved and make sure they're part of it.
Yeah, I get it's empowering, isn't it? When it's your own house that you're in there, then you're still, they can be, maybe they feel more helpful. I don't know, is that the right way to say? But I was just thinking about my partner, he was probably in the hospital being like, oh, sorry. So, oh, I'm in the way. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Like,
I think it's interesting, yeah, because I always feel like when I'm a midwife going out to home birth, I feel like I'm the guest. I'm the person that needs to kind of like do all the practical things, like work out the parking and find out where I'm going. And, you know, that kind of anxiety level is on me, whereas the couple can just get on and do what they need to do. Mm-hmm. Whereas when women are and their partners are coming into hospital, they are kind of like the guests and they feel like maybe they have to act in a certain way or, you know, say certain things. And it's just different. It's just different, isn't it?
It's fascinating. And I suppose that's a great thing. And what you guys do with your antenatal education as well is like really involving the birth partners in that, isn't it? I think traditionally a lot of antenatal education perhaps doesn't cover maybe that so much, or, you know, your birth partner has a role of support, but in involving them more, isn't it? It's a great place to educate the birth partners. Definitely.
And I think for men, this is not to generalize, but I know when I was doing my hypnobirthing, when I was pregnant, not to train to be an instructor, but when I was actually practicing it for my birth, my partner was quite dubious about it, because it just is, it doesn't sit well with them sometimes, or with him anyway. So I think the great thing about the antenatal classes is kind of like talking about the actual physiology of it, and that it's not all fluffy and, you know, weird and wonderful. We're doing these things for really solid, practical, physiological reasons, and that kind of gets them on board a bit more in terms of like, breathing techniques or listening to certain things, you know, that it actually is rooted in fact and in the way that the body works.
In science, isn't it? I think that's why all these things are becoming much more popular: hypnobirthing, home birthing, yoga, mindfulness, all these kind of mind-body interactions, isn't it? It's because there's hard scientific studies coming through now. And I feel like people can, you know, generations of people for hundreds of years have known these things to be true. And now that we've got some actual hard science behind it, isn't it? I feel it's really helping people to switch over, isn't it? To be like, oh, right, okay, here's a research paper. Yeah. I'm in. Or that's it. Yeah. The scientist in me speaks a bit like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. It is really interesting. And I mean, it's fascinating to me that the home birth, you know, there's lots of countries in the world where home births are illegal, where it's illegal for midwives to attend. In like states of America, for example, like there's the home birth, it's just not allowed at all. So I think in the UK, we are lucky that we've got these options as women, and you can choose what sits well for you, and you should be encouraged to do that.
Birth is a choice after all, isn't it? So
it is. Yeah. And you might not be able to control it, but you can definitely be part of the process and in some of your choices.
Fascinating. And I suppose this is what people can learn out more from you guys as well on your workshops. So
yeah,
you want to tell us a little bit more about when your workshops run? So I know that you guys have got one. Is it next weekend? Hopefully the podcast will be out in time just before that. Yeah.
So we've got a couple of antenatal classes coming up. We've got one on the 3rd and 4th of July. So I think we've got one space left on that antenatal class. And the way that we're doing it at the moment because of COVID is we have been doing sort of smaller groups, which is actually working really nice. You probably find that with yoga, like it's working really nicely, actually having more kind of intimate groups. And we're doing it over a Saturday and Sunday. So Saturday, we tend to talk about kind of like preparing for birth and kind of labor, when to call hospital. And then the Sunday, we tend to look at going home with baby, feeding, how to bathe the baby, all that kind of stuff. So we've got that happening then. And then we've also got an active birth workshop on the 31st of July. So that's looking more about kind of breath work, positions for birth. That's a kind of 3-hour workshop. So people sometimes do both with us. People just do one or the other. So it's, you know, it's totally up to you. And then we've got another antenatal class happening on the 28th and 29th of August. So get in touch if you'd like more information. We'd love to have more people join us.
Oh, lovely. And I will, of course, tag all your information in the podcast at the bottom so you can get a direct link through to you.
Fine.
Guys.
People can
lovely. Find you that way. Oh, lovely. Thanks so much, for joining us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you so much for having us.
We could talk about oxytocin. Maybe I should just create a new podcast, the Oxytocin Podcast, or not. Maybe no one will tune in.
I know. I honestly could just talk about it all day. I realize not everyone's as geeky as us.
Oh, I know. That's true. We'll take it offline, Hannah. We'll take it offline. But thank you so much. It was a pleasure to speak to you. And have a great day, everyone. We'll speak to you next time. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to catch the next episode. If you can't wait till then, give us a follow on Instagram and Facebook at Esk and Ivy, or check out our website www.eskandivy.co.uk.